Hello. Good evening. Welcome, everyone. Okay, so we're going to need you all to take your seats. And we're asking that you please don't move your seats. Leave them where they are. Okay, and I'm Irene. I'm an addict. Welcome. Okay, so we're going to start with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change. Courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Great, thank you. Okay, so my name's Irene. I'm an addict from Ireland, and I currently have the privilege of serving as your World Board Chair. So just from all of us serving NA World Services, I want to welcome you all to what's going to be one of the best weekends of your life. So the theme for the convention is the power of love, and it's also the theme for tonight's meeting. So this World Convention is truly a worldwide celebration of recovery. It has been 39 years since we were here in Washington, D.C. for the World Convention the last time. It's been 6 years since we were able to meet. Our last one, WCNA 37, was in Orlando 6 years ago. Shout out if you were there. And very sadly, due to our little mishap with the worldwide pandemic, we couldn't be in Melbourne, so we're sorry about that. But anyway, this is the 38th World Convention of Narcotics Anonymous. Okay. So when we were last here in 1985 in Washington, D.C., it was our 15th, and we believe there was about 2,600 addicts present. Now we don't even know exactly how many, but we're in the tens of thousands here. And we have many, many, many thousands more joining us through our audio streaming. And that is also, like here, translated into about 5 different languages to make it accessible to as many people as possible. Okay, so anyway, none of this happens without a lot of work. I'm sure from looking around, you can see all of the production values. A lot of work went into this over the last, it takes a couple of years to organize a World Convention, you know? And we thank you all for all those who registered early, registered on site, gave to the newcomer fund, because you guys make this possible. Yeah. So, can you please join me in thanking all of the team who made this possible, which are the staff, the members of the World Board, the work group, and all of you guys, the many, many volunteers who signed up to help us this weekend to make this possible. Also, you know, NA, we are a, we do public relations. And a part of our public relations, we reach out to local treatment centers. And because of your generous donations, we were able to, before this even started, give out 1,000 newcomer packs to treatment centers. And the recovery meetings and events are great fun, but even if you're not used to doing PR service, we'd encourage you to come along to some of the PR forums happening every day and some of our service workshops this weekend. They're very interesting. Okay, so we have, because of our good PR, we have been able to show that NA is a viable way of recovery. And we lead by example. And the mayor of DC has welcomed us into Washington, DC with a proclamation. Okay, and there it is shown on the screen. So for those of you at home, I'm going to read it. As mayor of Washington, D.C., I am pleased to extend greetings to the organizers and attendees of the Narcotics Anonymous 38th World Convention. Since its inception more than 70 years ago, Narcotics Anonymous has evolved into a worldwide multicultural organization offering a path to recovery, peer support, and hope for men and women struggling with addiction. Under this year's theme, The Power of Love, your event provides a platform for sharing experiences and strengthening the global Narcotics Anonymous community. As you gather for WCNA 38, may you be inspired to even higher heights of achievements in repairing and transforming lives. On behalf of the nearly 700,000 residents of Washington, D.C., I offer my heartfelt thanks for your important contributions to our communities and my best wishes for a successful event, Muriel Bowser, Mayor of Washington, D.C. So, I don't know about you guys, but back in the day, I actually got kicked out of a few towns. To be welcomed by the mayor, that's very special. And we have come a long way in fulfilling the part of our vision statement that says, NA has universal recognition and respect as a viable program of recovery. So listen, you guys, have a fantastic weekend. Those of you who are new here, newcomers, you are the most important people in the room. We welcome you, we embrace you. And whether it's your first or your 38th World Convention, enjoy every moment, get phone numbers and use them, take lots of pictures. And we're gonna show you a short video now which illustrates how far we've come. Since back in 1985, when we were last here, and we think about 6,000 meetings in just a couple of countries. Today, we continue to grow, and we have over 72,000 weekly meetings in 143 countries. So following our short video, The Growth of NA, I'm gonna hand you over to Yoel, our other World Board member who will be chairing this evening's meeting. Have fun.
From my friends. Oh, I get high with some help from my friends. I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends. Happens all the time. But what do I see when I turn out the light? I can't tell you, but I know that it's mine. I get by with some help from my friends. Oh, I'm gonna get high with help from my friends. Oh, I'm gonna try with some help from my friends. Stand up, walk out on me.
Thank you. My name is Yoel, and I'm an addict from Israel, and I'm a member of the World Board. Thank you very much. Okay, so now let's get started. Can we open the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer? God, grant us the serenity to accept things that cannot change, courage to change things that can. I am honored to be your chair for tonight's meeting. Thank you, and I'd like to welcome everyone to the Tuesday night's main meeting, celebrating the opening of the World Convention of Narcotics Anonymous, WCNA 38. As a representation of our diversity and to recognize those communities who are in attendance, it is now time for the geographical roll call. I'd like to introduce Patricia J. and Richard E. from the WCNA 38 work group to lead us through the list of communities from across the globe who are here to attendance at the World Convention of NA 38.
Hello, everyone. I'm an addict in recovery. My name is Patricia. And I'm so happy to be here. It's a wonderful opportunity, the power of love. I feel it in my heart. I've been a part of the work group, and I'm so grateful that Narcotics Anonymous, I found Narcotics Anonymous, and I surrendered to the program. So everyone have a wonderful convention.
Hey, everybody. I'm Richard, and I'm an addict. I'm also on the host committee. I'm from the Montgomery area via Chicago and a few other places. I'm excited and overwhelmed and really inspired to be here. Oh, and BJ, I have your hat. Or JB, I should say.
Okay, let's get started. We're the world. This is a world convention, and we're very excited about it. Yes, yes. I want to welcome everyone to the Chesapeake and Potomac region of Narcotics Anonymous in the D.C. area. Is anyone from Argentina?
Anyone here from Australia?
Is there anyone here from Bahrain?
Anyone here from Bangladesh?
Is there anyone here from Barbados?
Anyone here from Belize?
Is there anyone here from Bermuda?
How about Brazil? Anyone here from Brazil?
Is there anyone here from Bulgaria?
Anyone here from Canada?
Is there anyone here from Chile?
Anyone here from Colombia?
Is there anyone here from Costa Rica?
Anybody here from Denmark?
Is there anyone here from the Dominican Republic?
Anybody here from Ecuador?
Is there anyone here from Egypt?
Anyone here from Estonia?
Is there anyone here from Finland?
How about France?
Is there anyone here from Germany?
Anyone here from Greece?
How about, is there anyone here from Guam?
Guam.
Guam.
Anybody here from Guatemala?
Is there anyone here from Honduras?
Any members here from India?
India.
Is there anyone here from Indonesia?
Indonesia.
Anyone here from Ireland?
Ireland, I raised from Ireland.
Yeah,
yeah. Is there anyone here from Israel?
Anyone here from Japan?
Anyone here from Kuwait?
Okay, Kuwait.
Anyone here from Latvia?
Is there anyone here from Macau?
Macau? Okay.
Is there anybody here from Mexico?
Is there anyone here from Namibia? Namibia?
Namibia.
Is there anyone here from the Netherlands?
Is there anyone here from New Zealand?
Is there anybody here from Norway?
Is there anyone here from Pakistan? Yeah.
Anybody here from Panama?
Panama.
Anyone here from Peru?
Peru.
Is anybody here from the Philippines?
Is there anyone here from Portugal?
Is there anybody in the house from Puerto Rico?
Is there anyone here from Russian Federation?
Is there anyone here from Singapore?
Is there anyone here from Slovenia?
Slovenia.
Is there anybody here from South Africa?
Yeah. Is there anyone here from Spain, España?
Is there anybody here from Sweden?
Yeah, in the house!
Is there anyone here from Switzerland?
Is there anyone here from Thailand?
Is there anyone here from Ukraine?
Is there anybody here from United Arab Emirates?
Is there anyone here from the United Kingdom?
You did UK? Is there anyone here from Uruguay?
Is there anyone here from the USA? Anyone here from Italy?
Is there anybody here from Cuba?
No, Israel. No, we said Israel. I said that, yeah.
Iran.
Is there anyone here from Iran?
Is there anybody here from Nepal? And how about Trinidad and Tobago?
Any locals? If we missed your country, please stand and cheer now. If we missed your country, we can stand up and cheer now if we missed you. The common welfare of NA depends on the continued growth and well-being of the fellowship in every corner of the world. It works how and why, Tradition One.
Thank you, Patricia and Richard. So that's what I call the power of love, the power of diversity. Thank you. So we're going to take some readings on stage, and I will call on Amitabh from India to read Who is an Addict in Hindi. Amitabh.
Good evening. This is very cool. Very, very cool. Thank you. I love you too. My name is Amitabh. I'm going to say it really slowly. My name is Amitabh, and I'm a recovering addict. I'm from a tiny city called New Delhi. It's about 34 million people. It's in the north of India. India is a country towards the east. I'm going to be reading Who's an Addict in the language spoken in North India, which is Hindi. And if you can just clap for the anonymous members who translated this piece of literature into Hindi, it's saving thousands of lives. एडिक्ट कौन है हम में से ज़्यादातर लोगों को इस सवाल के बारे में सोचने की ज़रूरत नहीं है हम जानते हैं हमारा सारा जीवन और सोच किसी न किसी रूप में नशीले पदार्थों पर केंद्रित रहे इन्हें प्राप्त करना इस्तेमाल करना और अधिक पाने के लिए साधनों और जरियों की खोज करना हम नशा करने के लिए जीते थे और जीने के लिए नशा करते थे बहुत सरल शब्दों में एडिक्ट वह स्त्री और पुरुष है जिसका जीवन नशीले पदार्थों के नियंत्रण में है हम वे लोग हैं जो एक जारी रहने वाली और बढ़ती हुई बीमारी की जकड़ में हैं, जिसका अंत हमेशा वही है, कैदखाने, संस्थाएं और मौत. थैंक्स फॉर लेटिंग मी रीड.
थैंक यू अमिताभ. And I've asked Miko from Israel to read what is an A program in Hebrew.
Hi everyone, my name is Miko and I'm an addict and I'm from Israel. And in NA in Israel, when you say, hi, my name is Miko and I'm an addict, the whole crowd, the whole room will say, we love you, Miko. Would you like to try it? My name is Miko and I'm an addict. I'm going to read what is the Narcotics Anonymous program in Hebrew. מהי התוכנית מכורים אנונימיים? NA היא חברותא או חברה שלא למטרת רווח, של גברים ונשים עבורם הסמים הפכו לבעיה עיקרית. אנו מכורים מחלימים הנפגשים באופן קבוע כדי לעזור אחד לשני להישאר נקיים. זוהי תוכנית של הנזרות מוחלטת מכל הסמים. יש רק דרישה אחת לחברות, והיא הרצון להפסיק להשתמש. אנו מציעים שתנהגו בפתיחות, תנו לעצמכם הזדמנות. התוכנית שלנו היא מערכת עקרונות הכתובים בפשטות, כך שאנו יכולים לחיות על פיהם בחיינו היומיומיים. החשוב ביותר לגביהם, שהם עובדים. החברות בעיני לא מחייבת אותנו לשום דבר, איננו מקורבים לארגון כלשהו, אין לנו דמי חבר או תשלומי חובה, איננו מצהירים הצהרות כלשהן ולא מבטיחים הבטחות לאיש. איננו קשורים לשום קבוצה פוליטית, דתית או לכל גורם אוכף חוק ואיננו נמצאים תחת מעקב. כל אחד יכול להצטרף אלינו מבלי להתחשב בגיל, גזע, זהות מינית, אני מאמין כלשהו, אמונה דתית או היעדר אמונה. איננו מעוניינים לדעת במה או בכמה השתמשת, מי היו הסוחרים שלך, מה עשית בעבר, אם אתה עשיר או עני, אלא אך ורק מה אתה רוצה לעשות בנוגע לבעייתך ואיך אנו יכולים לעזור. החבר החדש הוא האדם החשוב ביותר בכל פגישה, כי אנו יכולים לשמור על מה שיש לנו רק בנתינה לאחרים. מניסיון הקבוצה שלנו למדנו שאלה הממשיכים לבוא לפגישות שלנו באופן קבוע, נשארים נקיים. Thank you, I love you.
And recovery is possible. Martine from Norway will read, why are we here?
Hello, my name is Martine and I'm an addict. Whoa! Yeah. I'm going to read Why Are We Here in Norwegian.
Hvorfor er vi her? Før vi kom til NAs fellesskap, kunne vi ikke mestre våre egne liv. Vi kunne ikke leve og nyte livet slik andre mennesker gjør. Vi måtte ha noe annet, og vi trodde vi hadde funnet det I rusmidler. Vi satte rusbruken foran velferden til våre familier, våre koner, våre ektemenn og våre barn. Vi måtte ha rusmidler for enhver pris. Vi gjorde mange mennesker stor skade, men mest av alt skadet vi oss selv. Ved vår manglende evne til å godta personlig ansvar, skapte vi faktisk våre egne problemer. Vi synes ut av stand til å møte livet på dets egne vilkår. De fleste av oss innså at vi I vår avhengighet langsomt begikk selvmord. Men avhengighet en så slu fiende av livet at vi hadde mistet evnen til å gjøre noe med det. Mange av oss endte I fengsel eller søkte medisinsk, religiøs eller psykiatrisk hjelp. Ingen av disse metodene var tilstrekkelig for oss. Vår sykdom dukket alltid opp igjen, eller fortsatte å utvikle seg, inntil vi I desperasjon søkte hjelp hos hverandre I anonyme narkomane.
Etter at vi kom til enda, innså vi at vi var syke mennesker. Vi levde av en sykdom som ikke har noen kjent tilberedelse. Den kan imidlertid stanses på et visst stadium, og tilfriskene er da mulig.
Thank you!
Thank you. Samantha from Oregon will read how it works.
Hi. I'm an addict. My name's Samantha. If anyone talks to my mother, please tell her I was wearing lipstick. This is how it works. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, oh, you guys, here's the thing. That will confuse and fluster me. I love you too, and I want everyone to hear these. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There is one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. We feel that our approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic, for the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society in everyday living, just that much faster do we become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. If you are like us, you know that one is too many and a thousand never enough. We put great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately, but we cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover.
Thank you. Jamie from Massachusetts will read the 12 traditions.
I love you too. Hi, my name is Andrea and I'm an addict. I will be reading the 12 traditions. We keep what we have only with vigilance. And just as freedom for the individuals come from the 12 steps, so freedom for the group spring forth from our traditions. As long as the ties that bind us together are stronger than those that would tear us apart. One, our common welfare should come first, personal recovery depends on NA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Six, an NA group are never endorsed, finance, or lend the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Lease problems of money, property, prestige, divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every NA group are never to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service center may employ special workers. Nine, NA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service board or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Narcotics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the NA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, or film. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Understanding these traditions comes slowly over a period of time. We pick up information as we talk to members and visit various groups. It usually isn't until we get involved with service that someone points out that personal recovery depends on NA unity, and that unity depends on how well we follow our traditions. The 12 traditions of NA are not negotiable. They are the guidelines that keep our fellowship alive and free. They are, by following these guidelines in our dealings with other and society at large, we avoid many problems. That is not to say that our tradition eliminate all problems. We still have to face difficulties as they arise, communication problems, difference of opinion, internal controversy, and troubles with individuals and groups outside the fellowship. However, when we apply these principles, we avoid some of the pitfalls. Many of our problems are like those that our predecessors had to face. Their hard-won experience gave birth to the tradition, and our own experience has shown that these principles are just as valid today as they were when these traditions were formulated. Our traditions protect us from the internal and external forces that could destroy us. They are truly the ties that bind us together. It is only through understanding and application that they work. Thanks for letting me read. Thank you.
I'd like to thank all our readers. Tonight's theme is the power of love. And I'm going to read a quote from Living Clean, page 256. Love is a form of intelligence. It's the intuition that brings us the right words when there are no words. They tell us when to step forward and when to back away. We feel love when we speak truth. When we are in a higher power's will, we naturally carry a message, and the message we need finds us. When we clear away the defects that block the passage, we can be clearer, a channel for the love that surrounds us. We tap into a love that is greater than ourselves and find that we are able to do things that we never thought possible. Brilliance comes through us. Yeah, I was asked to share a few words. I won't be long because we want to go on with the meeting. But I couldn't not tell you what I feel and what I think reading this chapter. Recovering people are beautiful people. Recovering people are successful people. We have potential. We have great potential. What we have to do is just the first step. Get out there and do it. I've learned to breathe deeply and to feel comfortable with what I'm doing. Be motivated by your dreams. Not only by your dreams, by your vision. Have a vision. Have a vision for your family, for your neighborhood, for your fellowship. This program works. Any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, find a new way to live. Thank you, thank you, thank you. At this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Bella. Bella was a point person from the World Convention that was scheduled to take place in 2021. And then in 2022 in Melbourne, Australia. And she worked hard on a convention that never happened. Please welcome Bella from Australia.
Hello, everyone. My name's Bella. I'm an addict. I'm from Melbourne, Australia, and as we say there, and I'm clean today. Look, I just want to thank everybody who's put this convention on. I've been here for 24 hours. It is just fucking magnificent. And you know, what a theme, what an unbelievable theme. I'm gonna cry already. I mean, is there a timer on this? Is she gonna cry within the first minute? Yes. I went to a meeting this afternoon and it was some old timers and they were asked what they would have said to their own newcomer. And I think what I would have said to me is that you are gonna find love. And I don't know whether that would have drawn me to NA or had me running out the door, because love was the scariest thing in the world and is what I wanted most. And just my history with love. I grew up in a pretty normal family. I mean, we had stuff going on. One of the things that people didn't know was that I was born almost deaf. And in fact, it wasn't found until I was about 7 years old that I was very deaf. And I spent a lot of time wanting to be good and wanting to be loved, and I kept fucking up all the time. And I didn't know I couldn't hear, and other people didn't know I couldn't hear. So I kept doing things that people said I shouldn't, and I kept not stopping when they said to stop. And I didn't know. All I knew was that I was a huge disappointment. And the first prayers that I can recall praying in my life was, I'd go to bed, I was trained to pray, and I would say, please God, make me good. And every morning I would wake up and I would make mistakes, and I would be in trouble. And my parents said they were disappointed in me. And I just found the whole thing so heartbreaking that I tried not to care. And I wish that these people, my family who said they loved me, weren't constantly disappointed with me. And I wish that they didn't love me, because it just seemed to make things much, much worse. The other thing, and I mean, we have diagnoses for it now, but the other thing, I was busy. And I asked a lot of questions. And I was running around and, again, getting into trouble. But I didn't understand. People asked me not to do or be whatever I was doing, but they didn't tell me what it was that they wanted me to do and what not to do. And I just lived in this constant state of just wanting to be good enough to be loved. I didn't understand any of this. Of course I didn't understand any of this. But I just grew up feeling wrong. I worked with a psychologist at one stage. I was working with him, and he said that at the bottom of every addict he'd ever found was people who felt like a small, wrong thing. And that's what I was, a small, wrong thing, wishing I didn't care that I was disappointing people, and wishing that people didn't expect anything from me. I hated people expecting anything from me because I knew I was going to let them down. When I was 7, they discovered I couldn't hear. I had some operations. My hearing is perfect, and just as well, because one of the great loves of my life is music. It would have been very hard. But here I was, this small wrong thing, disappointing people, trying to be good, trying not to talk in class, you know, all that sort of stuff. All the school reports, you know, would do better if didn't talk so much in class and paid attention, you know. They might as well have been writing, would do better if flew to Mars and, you know, drove rocket ships. I didn't know how not to talk. I didn't know how not to be busy. All I knew was that everything I did was a disappointment and not good enough. Thank fuck I found drugs when puberty hit. You know, it would have been really hard to be out there in the whatever it is, dating. You know, nah, not for me. Give me the drugs and let's move on with it. You know, I mean, I thought it might be nice to be lovable. I thought it might be nice to be loved, but I just knew that that wasn't me. That was not my path. My job was to tell a lot of jokes and play music and, you know, read a lot of books. But I thought love was completely out of the question for me. And, you know, every so often, I mean, I had relationships, you know, that had nothing to do with love. Well, not from my point of view. But every so often, one of these people would say that they loved me. And in that moment, I was the loneliest that I could be. And sometimes I would tell them that I loved them too, because that's polite. But but I just thought, you have no idea who you're dealing with here. I am a person who can't love and who won't accept your love, because that is a transaction that is going to break my heart, because I'm going to disappoint you and I'm going to disappoint me. You know, I used a shitload of drugs. What can I say? You know what it's all about. I used a shitload of drugs. I went quite mad. I was working full time. When I got clean, I was working. I had a child. I was studying. I was drinking 4 litres of wine a day, hitting up about a gram of smack, taking, I don't know, about 200 milligrams of Valium, double that in codeine, and then smoking dope, because just to kick the other drugs along, and getting up and walking and talking. I can't believe it now. You give me a bloody Panadol and But I was frozen. And the drugs weren't working. I remember towards the end of my using, I was doing the dishes. I hate doing the dishes. Used to take about 1/4 gram of smack to get me to do the dishes. So I was doing the dishes and all of a sudden realized that there was drips in the dirty water. and I realized that I was crying. But I had no idea why, and it just felt like this stuff was just coming out that had nothing to do with me. But what was happening is that I'd used so many drugs, I'd come out the other side in a weird kind of way, and I was empty. I was invited to go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting by a friend of mine. It was a convention, and I went to it. And I couldn't really tell you what happened, but there were really nice people there, and they laughed about the stuff that I thought you couldn't laugh about. You know, they'd talk about attempting suicide and waking up in a pool of vomit with a rope around their neck or something, and everyone just laughed and laughed and laughed. And I was really attracted to that. And so I did a few meetings, and then I was talking to a person at a meeting, and he said, "Are you going to get clean?" And I said, "Well, you know, I think I probably will." I said, "Look, I'll give up the smack first, and I'll give up the smoking dope because that's shit anyway. And look, I'll give up, but look, I probably won't be able to give up Valium because, you see, if I give up Valium, well, I can't." And what I really was saying, but I didn't know it, is that if I give up Valium, I'm going to start feeling again, and then I'm going to feel really disappointed in myself. And I'm going to feel really lonely, and I'm going to realize that I'm that same person who can't love, and it's just going to be too hard, and that if I start crying, I'm going to drown in my own tears, and I can't afford to do that, so I won't. And then that person said, "Oh, look, the only way to stop is to stop." And you know, I might have been mad, but I've never been stupid. And what happened is in that moment I realized they were completely right. So I just jumped off the whole fucking lot. Now, I should have been in hospital. You know, I was in the DTs. It was black light. But what happened is in my withdrawal, the most extraordinary thing happened. And that is I couldn't control anything. I didn't say before, there's so much to say, but I had been such a fucking control freak, so worried about, you know, letting people know what was really going on for me, trying to look at this hand over here, look at this over here, don't look here. And in that withdrawal, I found the most extraordinary thing happened, that even though I could barely talk, and even though I was crying and laughing at the same time, I felt unbelievable peace. Unbelievable pieces. I went to meetings and there were black lines around everything and I couldn't swallow anything and I was shaking like a leaf. You know, you get the cups of tea, with this much in the bottom of the thing because I was just rattling. And what I found was love in Narcotics Anonymous, but I didn't know that that's what it was. All I knew is that people accepted me as crazy and as wild and as unimpressive in lots of ways, I thought. And it was just extraordinary, and it really kind of drew me into NA. I got into service really early because I didn't want to take anything for nothing. Do you know what I mean? I didn't want to owe NA anything. So I got really involved in service, and I stayed in service the whole time. I'm still in service now. I fucking love it. I'm old enough and ugly enough and bossy enough to be able to mentor people now in service, and that's one of the things that I do. I was talking with some friends earlier. I think one of the things that I probably do best in NA is I create safe spaces for new trusted servants to make mistakes in. And, that's what I do. Thank you. Thank you. But this love business... This love business, you know, I was a couple of years clean and I still felt like, I mean, I really loved people in the room and that kind of love you people in the room and stuff like that. But I still didn't know that whether I was lovable enough. I tried to be perfect at absolutely everything, fearful that if I made a mistake somehow, people were going to see that I was still not whole. Not whole. There was this kind of, I've just got to get some water. Thank you. Thank you. And that's what happened. People are running around having affairs, not for me. I got to say this. I was in a relationship when I got clean with this really nice person, and but he didn't want to stop using. I wanted to stop using, and I just couldn't figure out how to get out of the relationship. I didn't want to disappoint him, you know. Couldn't get out of this relationship. And I was about 6 weeks clean, and I was thinking, how do I get out of this relationship? You know, he's really nice, but, you know, I'm trying to get clean, and he's using. Oh, I was going home, and the first 6 weeks at clean, I was going home living with someone who was hitting up. And I said, look, they say in NA you shouldn't be in a relationship for the first 12 months. And he asked me a very reasonable question. He said, well, what does that mean for me? And you know what I did? I went... really straight shooter in love. You know, really straight shooter in love. Anyway, he went, and that's good, and I got clean, and he didn't. So I had this kind of thing. So I didn't want to be in relationships at all. But what was happening is that I was being loved in NA, and I knew that I was. And I used to weep. I still do. You know, I weep with gratitude, you know, for the way that people treat me now. You know, I wept a lot in the first few months of clean time just because I was just so grateful for kindness and somewhere safe to go. And people who accepted me, I mean, what we do is really nutty, you know. Like, most of the time at a podium like this, it's someone standing up and telling you about their latest experiment and how many million dollars they got, and you can do it too, just follow these, whatever it is. And you know, we get up here and we say, well, look, I fucked up with that, and I really disappointed people, and I worked as in the sex industry, all that kind of stuff. It's just, it's so... You know, it's a real bizarro world we live in. But it's just wonderful, you know, to stand up in front of people and talk about my frailties and my vulnerabilities and my mistakes, and having people clap and tell me they love me. It is still such an incredible kind of privilege. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Anyway, I'm just getting to the juicy bit, right? In Chicago, in 1993, at the Sky's the Limit convention, by the way, I'd had what we call a practice relationship. I don't know if you know of that. You get clean a few years in, you have a relationship with someone who's completely unsuitable. I chose a beauty, a raging sex addict. So what would happen is when he would race off, he'd say, I think we need a break, and he'd race off with somebody else, because even in as far as love, romantic love went, I was still a small wrong thing. Because I hadn't done any work on that. I hadn't been in a sexual romantic relationship, so there was no lessons that I'd learned, and every time he went and did whatever he was doing, I thought it was because I was not good enough, and I was disappointing. But in that relationship, what happened was I learned that if I'm me on a Tuesday, doing my best, and I'm lovable, and then if I'm me on a Wednesday, doing my best, and my boyfriend is off having it off with someone else, is it me? No, nothing has changed. And I learned something really important from that. That so much of the way that other people think about me and expect me to be and all the kind of stuff that I bought into, and if they don't treat me well, it has absolutely nothing to do with me. Absolutely nothing to do with me. And that was an incredible lesson that I had to learn in order to be safe enough to fall in love. The other thing that happened, it was a messy breakup, public. Everybody in the local fellowship knew about it. It was a bit messy. I had grace, I thought. But you know what? I never ever once thought it's going, who's on my side? Do you know what I mean? Like, NA is too precious to fuck around with that kind of stuff. We were two idiots over there doing something we shouldn't have done. Nothing really should have, you know, anyone else's business. And I just needed to get on with my life. But what happened was that when it broke up, I allowed myself to feel it. And it's funny, you know, I'd read all, you know, you read, you know, these all these songs and, you know, stuff about broken hearts. I thought it was all just bullshit. But when I let my heart break over somebody who was completely unsuitable for me, I felt something in my chest shred. And I could hardly breathe. And in the middle of all that crazy pain and confusion, I was still me. I was still clean. I still had a really good life. And what actually happened was that I learned that disappointing someone, I didn't disappoint him, he was just, you know. But having someone not love me when I loved them was not going to break, it might break my heart, but I wasn't going to die from it. And once I'd realized that I wasn't going to die from it, I was free to do it again. So, and I'm getting close to the end, which is good because I have a lot to say about this. But in Chicago, I actually fell in love with someone who was worthy of me. Someone who was not threatened by my strength. Somebody who we shared values with. And because I'd had my heart broken before and I knew it wasn't going to kill me, I decided to give that man my heart too. And we were together for 28 years. And he died almost 3 years ago. Now, we had the most wonderful, wild ride. You know, we made each other laugh. We went every... I was in love with somebody who was in love with me. And I was capable of standing it because I wasn't frightened anymore. I wasn't frightened anymore, and we created a safe space for each other, and I just thought it was going to go on forever. Why wouldn't it? And then he developed this horrible condition where he just stopped just losing a bit all the time. First of all, not able to play the guitar, which was his great love. Not able to take photographs, which is his other great love. And then gradually becoming iller and iller. And it was during COVID. And we went into deep isolation together. And I didn't know that that was going to be a good thing. I don't think it is a good thing. But it just meant the last 18 months of his life, it was basically him and me loving each other and being in a space where people visited from time to time, but just really loving being with each other. We thought, in Australia, there's a thing called assisted dying, and we'd signed up for that. So when he was no longer able to eat proper food or speak, he was going to take his own life. But a couple of months before that, a friend visited and unbeknowingly brought in the virus. And we knew he was positive for COVID on Monday, and on Thursday night he died. But he died at home. And one of my jobs many, many years earlier had been working, I'm a psychiatric nurse, had been working in dementia units and very used to looking after people when they're very debilitated. And I was able to use all my skills that I had no, I didn't value them very highly at that point. But I was able to bring those all home, and nothing about his condition bothered me because I just kept seeing him. And the day he died, I and me and his daughter, we washed him and I put on his favorite clothes. We're waiting for them to come and collect him. And I just wanted to get busy. You know, I wanted to get busy, I wanted to clean up. But what's happened in NA is that I know that life is not to be avoided anymore. And so I was able to lie down with him and hold his cold hand and just to be grateful. We hadn't slept in the same bed for a while because he had all this equipment. And just to be there. And I knew then that this was something that I would never, ever, ever have dreamed possible before then. And since then, I still have that love. I mean, it's here, but sometimes it feels like I've got tiny holes, and it's as if the wind blows through me from time to time, because now I've experienced love. I have had no idea how safe and protective it is. And now I do, and I had it, and it was wonderful. And I could not have had that level of love if it hadn't been for Narcotics Anonymous. Letting me fall apart, letting me make mistakes, and loving me anyway. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Bella. And now, our second speaker from our host city here in Washington, D.C. Please welcome Walston B.
Love you back. I'm an addict named Walston. Thank you, I love you too. Such an honor. I want to thank the Convention Program Committee for asking me to speak here tonight. Such an honor, an overwhelming task at hand to carry this precious message of hope and recovery. It's just amazing how my story of devastation can bring so much hope. And that's all I got is my story. Who's ever heard of a dope fiend named Walston? That's where it started. The little boy wasn't all right with himself. I want to welcome you to my home city. We used to call it Chocolate City. I think it might be better served to call it Rainbow City now, maybe. So anyway, the other day, yesterday, I had the occasion to walk down 7th Street to get something to eat. And 7th Street, 7th and 8th, just happens to be where I found my bottom. For the last 3 years of my addiction, I would go into this slum shop, wholesale, whatever you want to call it, where you buy bullshit at. I said I wasn't going to cuss tonight. That's bullshit. Anyway, for the last 3 years of my addiction, I would go in and out every day. I'd get up, my wife would take me down here to this place, El Ruz, and I'd go in, and if I didn't have any money, the guy would give me a piece of slum. Some shit that looked like this, right? And I would walk around the streets of F Street, G Street, all around these streets where we are right now, trying to find my Vic. And as soon as I got enough money in my pocket, usually about $10, I wanted to say $40, but that would be bullshit. As soon as I got enough money to make my way uptown, I'd do that and I'd inject narcotics. And I'm talking about the end of the road. So the other day, yesterday, I'm walking in the same area and it's changed. It's changed. I ate some food in a Chinese food place and I come out because I didn't eat it all. And I walk past this homeless guy and he says, "Mister, I need some food." And I looked at him and I'm thinking, man, I got a whole bunch of rice and shrimp still left in this joint, a spring roll. Yeah, so I'm continuing on past him when the program kicked in. I said, I turned around and walked back to him, and I said, "Man, it's a lot of fucking shrimp in here. And a spring roll." And he looked me in the eye as I handed it to him, and he said, "Thank you." Now, I'm just trying to illustrate the fact that not only has 7th Street changed, because I actually got a bit turned around trying to get back to the hotel. I'm from this city. But not only has the city changed, I've changed. Y'all can clap for that shit. It's a direct result of getting all right with the little boy named Walston. Now, I'm actually born in Alexandria across the Potomac, and my mother moved to Central Avenue, Northeast Washington, D.C., when I was like 12. And I was a scared, insecure little kid named Walston. I had to fight. I had to get busy with keeping y'all up off me. And a lot of y'all have heard my story, and it don't change. I remember going in the mirror in the bathroom and started to practice mugging at myself. It takes so much energy to look ugly, don't it? I didn't realize till I got here and y'all told me it's so much easier to smile. I had to learn that though, because for 25 years, I practiced deception and deceit. And not recognizing that the disease I live with is much deeper than the narcotics I took. But I had to go through this journey of nearly killing me before the grace intervened. I know I didn't get me here. In the early 80s, I had a friend who had gotten clean. He used to come out his corner that I would hang out on, and he was clean, and I was like, "Randy, what did you do?" And he said, "When you're ready, let me know." I said, "Okay, you got $20? You know, and he kept coming by and he'd give me a few dollars. One day I said, "Man, I'll go." And he took me to St. Luke's, Central Avenue. And I went in this meeting and there was a whole bunch of y'all sitting in there and y'all gave me some stuff and you said, "Have fun, liquor. Because tonight, after the meeting, we're taking you to detox." I said, "Detox?" I stayed 3 days in that detox program when I made a decision that I wasn't ready. Open the door, I gotta go. And I stayed back out there on the streets for, I guess, 8-9 years, finding my bottom that I just shared with y'all. I found on the streets of D.C., selling this kind of stuff to people day in and day out, and didn't nobody kill me. Because I would see these same people, and they would say stuff to me like, "Slim, you know that shit turned in the shower?" I was like, "What?" Remember, I practiced deceit and deception well. So I found my way here digging my bottom. I remember one night pulling up on Southern Avenue. I hadn't gotten high, and I needed to get high. I thought I needed to get high. I didn't have any money. That was a minor problem. And I was standing under the street lights, like these damn lights shining on me tonight, with Bama Earl. Bama Earl always got a plan. And a shot rang out in the parking lot, Bell's Liquor Store lot. And I looked to my right, and little Leon was scurrying in the lot. And I was going to laugh at him when the next shot rang out. And I grabbed myself. Some of y'all know where I grabbed myself at. Real close to Snubby. If you smoke coke, you know Snubby. So I started running up the street and they said, get down, fool, they're shooting. And I sat down on the curb and guys came up around me and they said, man, what did you do? And I started reflecting on my day. And I couldn't figure it out because everybody was suspect. Everybody I engaged with, mostly I was suspect. Because when you give me something and you tell me to bring back something, I generally don't. If you can relate, just kind of every now and then do like this, let me know I'm in the right place. Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking about, you know, wanting to do right, but the disease dictating what I do. It was progressing. They took me to the DC General at that time, and by now my veins was gone. I was weighing 150, I weighed 200 now at best. I had three teeth. The story don't change, man. It's my NA grill. Yeah, yeah. The veins was gone. I was three shades darker. I had a fro when the fro was out of style. And they had to do a subclavicle cut through my neck in order to administer the antibiotics. I'm not trying to depress anybody. I'm just trying to tell you what I did to me in the disease. Wanting to stop, can't stop. Went back to the same corner when I got out of the hospital. I didn't love me. Early on, I remember furniture moving in the house. There wasn't no furniture movers in the house. Yeah, I remember glass breaking, mama crying, violence. It traumatized the little boy. I couldn't make no sense of that then, but I know today that narcotics did something for me that I couldn't do for myself at that time. It worked until it crossed the line, and I began to live under animalistic instincts. Thank God for His grace and His mercy. So finally, while I was selling that slum on these streets, I got locked up one day. I had made a hot $10. Y'all know what you do with $10. And I bought I don't like crack, but I decided I'd get me a 10-piece because I couldn't get no dope. And I was walking to try to find somewhere to go smoke this 10-piece. And they said, the jump out's coming. And so I crushed it in my hand because I'm real smart. And the jump out pulled up in front of me. And he got out the cruiser, he said, don't move. I said, okay. And he walked up to me, took a little knife out of his pocket, he twisted my arm behind my back, and scraped some crumbs on the hood of the cruiser. I said, what you gonna do with that? It turned blue. He said, lock your ass up. I never thought all the arrests that happened to me in active addiction, Rocky Butte Jail in Portland, Oregon, Atlanta Jail, DC Jail, Alexandria Jail, Old Alexandria Detox, New Alexandria Detox, DC General Detox, jails, institutions, yeah, endocarditis around my heart from the bacteria and the dope, the cut. It was gonna be a funeral and I was gonna be the star attraction and I couldn't stop it. That arrest was my saving grace. I made a decision in that jail because I was getting some help on the unit I was on, 3CF. The youngins was beating on tables, telling me, Slim, don't fuck with that TV. I was like, who did y'all do? Talking to your ass. I was like, man, I need to do something about my life. I was 41 by then. It was time. I said, these guys, I done used as long as they've been in the world. If I don't do something about my life, I'm going to die like this. And I made a decision to go into this program that they had in that jail. And I started learning how to take the mask off. I got reintroduced to Narcotics Anonymous. H&I came in. Y'all told me y'all would love me till I learned how to love myself. Yeah, I was suspicious of that shit. Everybody in your circle ain't in your corner. I know that today. But I got a prayer life and I got a relationship with God that the steps has helped me develop, that I don't fear no man today. You know, I'm walking with discernment. I'm practicing this program like my life depends on it, because it does. So I started learning how to take the mask off. I promised those guys when I left that jail, I stayed in there 4 months in that program, that I was gonna keep going to these classes. Yeah, and I've been doing that religiously for the last 32 years. Y'all started hugging me. That hugging shit was kind of like, I had to, you know, wait a minute now. I'm checking my pockets when y'all do that shit. You know, because when you dishonest, I mean, I did wrong so long that doing right seemed wrong. But now I've been doing right so long that when I do wrong, it feels wrong. I messed around and started hugging folk and, you know, bear hugging folk. Because that's the love I needed. My father never did that. My father said, boy, tie your shoes. When I got in a little fight outside and I came in the house crying, he said, uh-uh, don't come in here with that shit. Get your ass back outside. Even if you lose, don't come in here crying. So I learned how to stuff my feelings early on. Y'all told me it was all right to cry. Y'all showed me how to laugh again. I stopped gritting at the world. I learned how to say thank you, excuse me. The stuff that we still struggle with. Diversity is our strength. I stopped looking at your shoes to determine if you should be in my network. I thank God for people like Albert C. Al C, man, I used to buy dope from Al C on 12th and U Street. Al say, pass me by and you won't get high. He said, on like a 100-watt bulb. I said, what? He says, hitting and sticking like Popeye's chicken. I said, oh, that's my motherfucking man. I'm copying from him. When I got to Narcotics Anonymous, he was here to greet me. Evidence, the evidence I needed. Helped get me a job chauffeuring. Gave me some ties to put on, because I ain't have shit. That's the love I needed. Everybody in this program don't extend that kind of love. Why? Man wrapped in self is such a mighty small package. My disease had me so constricted that I couldn't even breathe right. This program has helped me learn how to breathe. Somebody, a friend of mine, texted me while I was sitting up here. He said, take a deep breath. That's what we do in this program. Went back to school because somebody was at the podium sharing that we could do that. Did a 8th step, put the daughter on the list, that I abandoned at birth in Oregon. 8 years or so into my recovery, I get a call. I'm on the phone with a grand sponsor talking about my inability to buy gifts for my children here that Christmas. When the beep come, y'all know what the beep mean. I can't click over. My self-centeredness done kicked in. But I said, well, wait a minute, Tom. Let me check this call out. So I take the call. The person on the other end say, is this Walton Barbarian? I said, what? My name is Walston Balboa. She said, is it Wally Balboa? I said, do you want Walston Barber? She said, yeah. I said, okay, you got him. She said, I'm a private investigator. I was like, oh, no, you got the wrong number. She said, no. You got a daughter that wants to meet you. Every time I tell that story, I get chills. She don't want nothing from you. She just want to know who her father is. That was in Oregon. I put on the eighth step and said, I ain't gonna never get nothing. I ain't know the name. I put baby, put up for adoption. See, this program allows you to be creative enough where you ain't got to be able to read and write to do the steps. How about that? We take away your excuses in here. Yes, sir, we each other's eyes and ears, but you got to be transparent enough for us to know how to help you. When they asked me to do this, I was like, why me? And y'all kept saying, why not you? I wasn't saved for me. I was saved for whoever need to hear that we can stop using, lose the desire. Come on, y'all. This ain't no lecture. This is a we thing. I'm clear on that. I'm loving this thing. Watch me. You ain't got to just listen. Watch, because your feet is what the program is about. I got to get my feet to do what it's so easy to do up here at this mic. Yeah, because on the street, I'm going to get me $20. Dead broke. You know, because I can do that real well. But can you make your feet match what you're saying? That's what the program asks. Third step say, don't come short. I'm a come short kind of guy. I get $40. I start peeling money off. I put two in the back, two over here. I got $36. The dope man said, the dope $40. Why are you short? Because I'm a come short kind of guy. Program say, don't come short. You got to bring all the money. And I've been bringing all the money, and I've been able to, as a result, go back to school, get some credentials. I can legally put six alphabets behind my name. I don't say that for applause. I say that because I ain't just get some teeth in here. I got some credentials. Fucked around and retired from the federal government with only 14 years of service. Didn't see how I could get a pension that would enable me to retire. But at 74, I was tired. Thank you. God's grace. So I came home, and God say, well, you got these credentials. Don't forget them six numbers that come before your name. Y'all know that federal number that you get? Yeah, I need not forget that. But I'm able to work at home online, virtual. I could have never envisioned this 32 years ago. But as a result of people loving me and allowing me to love them back, Randy R., Tom S., keep coming back, Sonny. I'm talking about the predecessors. I don't ever want to forget the predecessors. Mark L. These people love me genuinely. They allowed me to ride them home in my car. They allowed me to go to the store for them. Gave me their bank cards and trusted me enough to purchase stuff for them. This program is about love and the 12th step, embracing the 12th step, doing something for somebody and not telling nobody. Yeah. It's enabled me to kind of get out of the way of self. You know, but let me just say this. Early on, I was looking for love in all the wrong places. Anybody else like that in here? I've been married 4 times. How about that? That's my truth. But see, my wife is in the process now, and we've been married 10 years last week, right? And I love my wife. I love my wife. So if you love somebody, you don't want to hurt them, right? So it's about unconditional love. But I do have conditions on my love. If I catch it with somebody, I don't know. I'm not so sure. But if she catch me with somebody, I think I'm supposed to be let off the hook. That's some bullshit. That's why I recognize who I was. Who I was somebody that shot at nothing, hit it with amazing accuracy for a long time. Now I got some absolute principles that I'm living by. I'm trying my best to hit the target, but if I don't hit the bullseye, all I had to do is land on the target, man, and I'm getting it pretty well right. I want to thank y'all. That's my story. I'm losing my voice. I'm sticking with it. I'm waltzing. I'm an addict.
Let's thank Bella and Walston once again. Assam from Bahrain will read us, "We Do Recover" in Arabic. Assam.
Hi everyone. I'm a grateful recovering addict from Bahrain. My name is Assam. You know, I've been trying to prepare something to say before reading, and I say, come on, let's just ditch it off. I will skip the gratitude, paying gratitude for God and NEA and all the members for my night prayer today. So I just wanted to say, you know, I never comprehended the power of love. And, you know, a big part of me was healed today by the power of your love. I love you all, guys. I'm gonna read, "We Do Recover." And I just want to say, I've been struggling to get my yellow tag, and I got it just last month. So we do recover. نحن بالفعل نتعافى. إلى كل أعضاء البحرين أحبكم. عندما نكتشف في نهاية الطريق أننا لا نستطيع بعد الآن أن نحيا كبشر سواء بالمخدرات أو بدونها، نواجه جميعاً نفس المأزق. ماذا بقي أمامنا لنفعله؟ ويبرز أمامنا هذا الاختيار: إما أن نستمر بكل ما نستطيع لنصل لنهايات مريرة، السجون والمصحات أو الموت، أو نجد أسلوباً جديداً للحياة. في الماضي لم يتح هذا الاختيار الأخير إلا للقليل من المدمنين، والمدمنون اليوم أوفر حظاً، فلأول مرة في التاريخ يثبت أسلوب بسيط نفسه في حياة الكثير من المدمنين، وهو متاح لنا جميعاً. إنه برنامج بسيط وروحاني ولكنه ليس ديني، يعرف باسم زمالة المدمنين المجهولين. Thank you guys.
Thank you, Assam. Please note that lost and found badges cannot be replaced. Please keep your badges with you at all times. Tonight, we have some great entertainment in our coffee house in the hall, starting 9:30 p.m. Check it out. The merchandise room will be open tomorrow from 9:30 till 1 p.m. Those who already have a wristband. Access to the room requires a wristband. Wristbands can be picked up at the merchandise room. NAS on-site store is open 10 till 6 p.m. tomorrow. All are welcome. The Lost and Founds is located at Convention Information Booth in the Convention Center lobby. Please do not smoke in the loading docks. Smoking is on the docks may result in being asked to leave the center. We recognize, please bear with me, we recognize that it's common practice for members to take photos and videos at NA events and post them on social media. We do not believe this is to be a conflict with our traditions, as long as they are enjoyment of members and are not made available to the general public. Please be considerate of our guiding principles and anonymity of others as you share your photos and videos from this NA event. For more information, please see the service pamphlet titled Social Media and Our Guiding Principles. We will close main meetings at WCNA 38 by reaching out to those nearest us rather than creating a circle. We will close the meeting with the third step prayer. Many of us have said,